Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Our region and much of the nation were startled 6.5 years ago when a disgruntled citizen named Cookie Thornton went to a city council meeting in Kirkwood and killed 5 people before he himself was killed by a city police officer. As the story unfolded, it became clear that racial attitude was a factor, showing an unflattering underside to what had been considered an idyllic suburban community. One of the victims was City Councilwoman Connie Carr, a woman who might have gone on to become the city's mayor. One of Carr's friends, filmmaker Sarah Paulson, has produced an animated film that is an homage to Councilwoman Carr. It looks to the days before the shooting and since. It's titled Elegy to Connie. Sarah Paulson joins us in studio. In a few minutes, we'll also be talking with Ron Hodges. He chairs Community for Understanding and Hope, an organization committed to healing wounds and breaching the racial divide in Kirkwood. Paul Ward is deputy mayor of Kirkwood and a member of the city council. Also with us is Reverend Scott Stearman, senior pastor at the Kirkwood Baptist Church. I thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you today.
Thank you.
Sarah, I'd like to start with you. What was it about Connie Carr that prompted you to make this film?
Connie was an amazing leader, a powerful woman, and she really believed in, I think, everybody she met. And so I think one of her guiding principles as far as leadership was inclusivity, clarity, transparency. And so I think when she passed, being a close friend of my family and my mother's as well, it felt like a giant hole, and it also felt like some of our sort of beliefs in the political process had somehow disappeared. I mean, not only have we lost this amazing woman that believed in us, but we'd also lost this leader. And she'd been a voice for my mother and many of her friends with issues in the community.
But in fact, she was only part of that very, very big story.
Yeah.
I gather that in putting all of this together, you discovered some things perhaps that you hadn't known before about that community.
Yeah, certainly. I think from my perspective, I went in thinking I was doing a story that was primarily about women trying to have political voice in a community. And while making the piece, one of the women I interviewed was a woman of color from Meacham Park. And I think hearing her story, it made me realize a lot that I had not known about Meacham Park as far as the history, the original size of Meacham Park, how it had been developed upon. I think that some of how much community had been lost. And that led me on a further journey, I think, of understanding white privilege. That I think it's possible to live in a really beautiful community such as Kirkwood, but have a very white experience, and for that to be perpetuated and for me not to have known as much about things that were going on in Meacham Park. And that was a big, I think, opening for me for understanding. And it actually gave me understanding for sort of everybody involved in the shooting. I mean, it gave me empathy for Cookie and what he had been going through. And it gave me empathy for the council and how awkward it is as a white person to talk about issues of race. And it gave me, I mean, I already had empathy from my mother and her friends because they had lost so many, I mean, they had lost so many people they knew. And I think that was really the beautiful thing about making the film, was that there was a story I thought I was going to tell, and then that there was the story that I also came to understand by making it.
It seems to me that that is the essence of this whole story and the whole discussion, the fact that you were unaware of what was going on literally around the corner.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, when I was in middle school in the 90s, during some of the development that happened in Meacham Park. And I know my mother had kind of told me about it and she'd gone to different meetings. I just think that it didn't fully enter my reality. And, you know, looking back, I have a lot of sadness about that. And, you know, I think it's made me examine how many relationships do I have with people of color? How often am I in the minority? And I think that this is something that has really opened up my life a lot.
It opened up a lot of eyes about Kirkwood. I said in the introduction it was considered an idyllic community until this incident happened. We have a couple of clips from your film, Elegy to Connie. I'd like to play one now with regard to what the attitude in Kirkwood is at this present time.
Yeah.
Kirkwood is a town that thinks it's a utopia. People are pretty much like anywhere else. I mean, they're friendly.
A vibrant community where people actually want to come.
That's from the film Elegy to Connie, produced by our guest Sarah Paulson. Do you think Kirkwood today is an idyllic community?
I mean, there are many things about it that are idyllic, you know, but I think a really idyllic community is willing to embrace its difficulties and problems as well as keep working towards being sort of idyllic. So for me, I mean, I grew up in Kirkwood. I felt like I had a wonderful education in childhood, and I have many friends that I've stayed in contact from that. I now live in the city, and the city sort of equally feels idyllic for me. I mean, I live in a neighborhood that's very diverse. I walk a lot. I walk in the Tower Grove Park every morning. So, I mean, I think that in a way, each of us defines what is idyllic, and we kind of search and try to make that happen in our own lives. And so there's definitely things about Kirkwood that are idyllic for me, but there's definitely things about St. Louis City that are really idyllic.
I want to get to our other guests, and I will in just a moment, but I want to ask you one more question specifically about the film. What did you come to understand about Cookie Thornton, the shooter in this tragedy?
I think for me, going into the film, I thought that Cookie, sort of like some of the women that Connie had been sort of a voice for, had really had a lack of a voice. And when he did voice things at the council, that was in a way that really made the council kind of shut down instead of wanting to communicate more with him. And I think after the film, it felt more like that there were multiple components that sort of happened in the same instance, and they all sort of came to that shooting. So, you know, the history of Meacham Park and Cookie going from being sort of this hero to sort almost this person that people did not want to interact with as much. You know, his possible psychological breakdown and financial troubles that he was having, the way that the council responded to him out of discomfort. And then living in a place like Kirkwood where you do feel like there's some things that are so perfect about it, and then how do you hold that opposite in yourself? How do you hold that you're having an experience that is, you know, you're feeling you're being racially discriminated, and if that is not being accepted by the larger community, what options do you have? I mean, I don't know.
Would you agree that the basis, the background of the shooting basically is the result of this racial divide, that this was a racially motivated incident?
I think that's a big part of it. I still think it's more complicated. I think it's so many different elements coming together at one time. I mean, I think the wild thing is, like, my mother knew Cookie. So many people knew Cookie. They were good friends with him. I mean, I think there was also, like, a breakdown in communication and relationships. And so I think that for me, I had to come to understand the racial component, because I initially thought it was mostly just about people not feeling represented and having voice. And I now definitely see that racial component. But I still think it's a lot of things at one time.
Let's get to some of the other guests now, and stay with us, Sarah. We'll be coming back to you from time to time during the discussion. Ron, what do you think?
Well, I like a lot of things that she said, because it's true. One of the main things, as you know, I was part of that mediation agreement. Mm-hmm. And one of the main things that two main things that came out of that was putting more emphasis on the police department. The other one was revamping the HRC, which the HRC and the police department have been doing a lot of things.
Which HRC?
HRC, I'm sorry, Kirkwood Human Rights Commission. They have, since everything has changed, since the mediation agreement, they used to didn't even have a quota where they could even meet. A lot of the rules have changed. They're doing more things to be more visible in the community, such as, for example, not too long ago, they did at the Kirkwood School, Kirkwood High School, they did a session on a symposium on bullying. So they're trying to meet the needs of all the different issues in Kirkwood, which I think has been a pretty good factor. One of the other main things is that we hope would never, ever happen again is the situation with Cookie, as you stated, Sarah, not having a place to go and communicate. If you can't communicate with the city, hopefully the Human Rights Commission can get in the middle of that and help communicate a situation like that so we don't have that to occur again.
That's because during the public comment section during the city council meetings, the time was limited and some people were more or less excluded from
exactly.
having any comments whatsoever. And generally, the people who were excluded were of color.
You know, I learned during the mediation agreement that not only people of color had problems with communication with the city, but a lot of whites did too. So.
Right.
I don't want to characterize it just that the blacks are the only ones that had that ideal in their head that they were the only ones that were.
Just to clarify for our audience who don't know, the mediation agreement was put together by whom?
When you say put together by whom? I actually asked the U.S. Justice Department to come in.
The Justice Department. That's
right.
What I was getting
yes.
to. The Justice Department
yes. I'm
was
sorry.
Involved.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me go ahead.
Well, the only other thing I wanted to add is that since all this has happened, one of the things that we're trying to do now is just make sure the community feels inclusive, all of Kirkwood. We have put together the Human Rights Commission, CFUH, Community for Understanding Hope, Meacham Park Neighborhood Association, and Citizens of Kirkwood. And the main thing, their mission right now is to create a collaborative environment that promotes and participates in initiatives that further a more inclusive and welcoming community and celebrates the value of our diversity. Meacham Park, as before the shooting, was starting to become diverse, and now it's even becoming more diverse. The police department, and I'm going to make it real short here, but even Chief Plummer. I mean, I don't think we would be as far as we are without Chief Plummer. I'm not trying to just defend him because he's a good friend of mine, but it's a fact. Even this year, while we're speaking now, he's instituted a summer youth program for all the kids in Kirkwood and Oakland. It's at Nyfer School. It's three times a week. So there's things that we're steady ongoing trying to do. We admit that in the beginning that the mediation agreement probably wasn't the best, but it was a start. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of us are still trying to continue to make that effort happen.
Let me get some comment mm-hmm. from the other guests. Paul Ward, how would you assess the climate right now?
Well, when you look at what's going on nationally, I'm a Tip O'Neill guy, so you know all politics is local.
Mm-hmm.
You have that same feeling going on in the community. People are upset. They're mistrusting. They're looking for someone to show them, you know, where the light is. And, you know, it's tough. And Kirkwood is a third generation resident of Kirkwood. I'm blessed to have been raised in a community like Kirkwood. As a minority, I never felt that way, you know.
Are you suggesting the situation today may not be much better than it was then? You say that there's still this polarization.
Sarah kind of touched on it. There's a politeness that goes on. There's a, I don't want to be one of those people, even though, you know, underlying some of it is, you know, you're not as good as me. So some of that, but that goes on everywhere. For us.
Well, that, it doesn't go on, you know, everywhere hasn't had six people shot to death in
yeah,
the city
but,
council.
But when you look at Columbine and those yeah. kinds of situations, you know, you would expect in 2014 that we would have a more peaceful world. We don't even have a more peaceful world. People are angry. People are upset. They don't feel like they have enough, and they want somebody to blame for that. You know, one thing about being an elected official, first of all, I'm a citizen, and government is people. It is us. Many of the employees of the city of Kirkwood are residents of Kirkwood. And so, you know, with all the things going on, people sometimes need to take a deep breath and realize we all count.
I'm late for a break. Well, I want to get to Scott Stearman before I take that break. Because, Scott, quite frankly, I'm somewhat stunned by what I'm hearing here. You know, you expect 6 years after an incident such as the one experienced in Kirkwood that things will have gotten better and everybody will be having sort of a kumbaya moment and saying, hey, you know, we've really improved the situation. I'm not getting that sense all of a sudden.
Well, let me sing a little kumbaya for you, Don, because I would like to voice a little bit of a different opinion. I really think we're at a very different place as a city. They were before the shooting. And let me just give you one example. This morning we had a meeting at Kirkwood Baptist Church. We're planning a citywide service day that we have done for a number of years with a number of other churches and civic organizations. And at this meeting, the mayor was there, the city manager was there, his assistant was there, somebody from the police department was there, all helping us, a group of churches and other folks, to coordinate a citywide service day. I don't know if that would have happened, this sense of the city being there to serve its citizens in really a very kind of overt way. I don't know if that would have happened a number of years ago in the same kind of way. And Art McDonald, Mayor Art McDonald, has done a tremendous job about just getting out there and trying to both be and seem to be a city servant.
So is everyone saying that I'm misreading what I've been hearing so far?
I don't know if you have enough time before your break.
Let me take the break.
Okay,
if you're ready to comment to that.
Yeah.
We'll continue our conversation. We're talking about the situation in the city of Kirkwood, six and a half years, that is, after that dreadful shooting at City Hall in which six people died. With me in the studio is Sarah Paulson, producer of a film, Elegy to Connie, which is about this incident and about some of the people who were involved in it. Ron Hodges, from whom you just heard, is chairs the Community for Understanding and Hope. He'll be back to continue his comments in a second. Paul Ward, deputy mayor of Kirkwood, and he's a city council member, and Scott Stearman, Reverend Scott Stearman, is pastor at the Kirkwood Baptist Church, senior pastor, I should say. We'll be get back to continue the conversation. Ultimately, we want to bring you into it at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK, or you can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air. If you have comments about the situation in Kirkwood then and now, we would love to hear from you. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back as we continue our conversation on the situation in the city of Kirkwood 6.5 years after that terrible shooting during a city council meeting back in 2008. We'll continue in just a moment, but here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers says another lock and dam on the Mississippi River north of St. Louis has closed due to high water levels. While barge traffic has been interrupted, the Corps says levees are holding and no major flood damage to homes and businesses is expected. The University of Missouri is expanding an early alert system that tracks academic performance to all four of its campuses this fall. The system is designed to improve retention and graduation rates by better connecting students, faculty, and staff. And Missouri Governor Jay Nixon today vetoed legislation that would have shifted responsibility for regulating the state's deer ranches to the Department of Agriculture instead of the Department of Conservation. Nixon said he vetoed the bill partly because he believes it would thwart the state's efforts to prevent deer disease. Join us on the radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our guests and the situation in the city of Kirkwood. Reverend Scott Stearman is with us in studio. Paul Ward, deputy mayor of Kirkwood and city council member, also with us. Sarah Paulson is here. She's the producer of the film Elegy to Connie, which is about that situation 6 years ago and the developments following it. And Rod Hodges is with us. He chairs the Community for Understanding and Hope. And I had to interrupt you, Ron Hodges, if you wanted to comment before the break. Go ahead.
Well, I was listening to what Paul said, and I kind of somewhat agree with him, whereas some of the people still voice their opinion that nothing's changed. But let me just say this. One of the biggest challenges for me since we've been all working together trying to do this is critics. I feel sometimes we can learn from critics. And it's very hard sometimes because sometimes no matter what you do or how you try to make sure you're saying it a certain way so you don't offend people, you're still going to have that challenge of somebody's not going to agree. As Reverend Stearman and Paul both can tell you during our dialogues, Kirkwood is 27,000 people. We couldn't reach everybody. But to show you that I feel personally that some things have changed, we did a bus trip to Memphis, which was pretty much was predominantly half and half diverse group. We have Rebecca Whitaker, who is a white citizen, who is going to be speaking as a special guest speaker tonight at the Human Rights Commission, and she's going to be speaking on witnessing whiteness, the effect of white privilege in Kirkwood. So all I'm getting at is, sure, I don't care where you are, where you live, what you do, you're not always going to reach everybody. But I do see some changes because I don't think we would have been able to possibly do a bus trip with a group of people from Meacham and Kirkwood together if some type of help, mm-hmm. I mean, some type of interest of people wanting to, as Paul say, be polite or whatever. Mm-hmm. But even if you want to be polite, you're doing it because you know that something needs to change. Sure. So that's my opinion. I don't think we're where we want to be. There's so many things across the country that it's not where we want it to be. But speaking on just Kirkwood, I think we've reached some people. I think there's efforts steady being made. Paul's first African-American deputy mayor. His brother's the first African-American person, to my knowledge, on the Parks Board. Mm-hmm. So all I'm saying is that the demographics are somewhat changing. Do we have still some more that we could do? Sure. But I do see some progress. I do.
Sarah, go ahead.
If I could comment, too. I was able to participate in a Witnessing Whiteness meetup group in Kirkwood with Rebecca. And the fact that there were a group of people that were willing to have conversations about white privilege mm-hmm. in Kirkwood was, I think, something that was very healing and made me feel really confident about the direction of Kirkwood. And I would also like to add on, I don't think that these are problems that are just unique to Kirkwood. I mean, St. Louis City has color lines. And I think, the woman who started Witnessing Whiteness, Amy Hunter from the YWCA, I mean, she's trying to have these conversations all over the city. So I think, Kirkwood was just the place where the shooting happened and it had all the things that led to that. But I think that there is a need for the broader St. Louis community to be in these conversations. I mean, when we talk about development in other neighborhoods, there is a certain air the whiteness brings.
How would you describe white privilege, Paul?
Being a minority, it's quite interesting because my white friends have no clue. They have no clue when we go places or when they have excluded me because they knew they couldn't take me when we were teenagers. There is just an acceptance when you walk in a room where they find it, they're always trying to brush my shoulder, like, Paul, get that chip off your shoulder. And I go, you walk in a room where everyone immediately accepts you because of who you are and what you look like. Where I come in, and if I could quickly, one of the things that always bothered me is when you hear, well, I don't see color. Well, that's a damn lie. I mean, animals recognize the difference. I mean, a leopard knows the difference between it and a tiger. That's not what it is. It's about acceptance. It's about embracing one another. And we don't have enough of that. But one thing I did want to make clear is, there are good-meaning people in Kirkwood, and the vast majority of them, and I say this at council meetings, they get up every morning, they raise the shades, they see that the streets are still there, the lights still work, they get their kids ready, send them off to school, and then they expect the government to do everything else until they get back home, and that includes schools. What people need to do is we need to get back to maybe that gentler age where, more people just greeted each other just because that was the thing you do. Too many people walk past each other and don't try and communicate, even short of just saying, hello, how are you today?
Scott Stearman, does the definition we just heard of white privilege match yours?
Yeah, I think it does. The best example, I don't know if this works for everybody, but, you know, no white person has ever gone into a Walgreens and tried to find a Band-Aid that matched their skin color. That, to me, is just one of those great examples that we, you know, and we never have, that's never crossed many people's minds that you would ever have to look for something that matches your skin color. And I just think there are thousands of examples of things that we as Caucasians just simply take for granted, never really reflect upon, and never really recognize that there is a fundamental difference of being a person with dark skin in America. And I really appreciate Sarah's perspective about the need to look back at our own history, try to grapple with it, try to deal with it to the extent we can. But I think it's also important, as she, I think the film probably very evidently does, you've got to end looking forward and saying, how can we move forward from this? And I think there's a lot of that happening in Kirkwood right now.
With regard to the film, let me point out right away, and we'll have this information on our website, by the way, the film Elegy to Connie will be shown on July 13th at the Tivoli Theater in University City as part of the St. Louis Filmmakers Showcase. That's going to be at 2:30 in the afternoon. Is that right, Sarah? And it will be also shown in Chicago, and it will also be shown on television as well.
Yeah, as part of the UCity Calip grant.
We'll have all of that on our website. Plenty of opportunities for people to see it, and it's an important one, I think, for people to see who want to further understand what's going on in Kirkwood and what did go on in Kirkwood. Let's go to the phones. A number of callers, and I want to bring in Al initially. He's calling from Meacham Park, so let's hear what he has to say. Go ahead, Al.
Hey, thanks for having me and to your guests. I know a couple of the members on this panel. Anyway, Paul, I think you were right on in your summation of white privilege. It's a given. But to go a little further, I remember when Meacham Park was annexed. I remember when it was trying to be annexed. We all wanted some fairness. Some of us had businesses. We wanted to participate in the redevelopment project. And we were told, we were promised, in fact, oh, yeah, you're, of course you'll be able to participate. And I, like Cookie and several of us, were shut out. We were pretty much shut out. Cookie's anger rose to a level that was unacceptable, in my opinion, by most people. But there still was a level of frustration that we all shared. And one further thing I would like to say, what's the minority participation now in Kirkwood? I mean, they hire contractors to do things throughout the city. What's the level of participation now?
Who can answer that?
Zero. Zero.
Yeah. Zero participation.
Yeah, we don't have it. We haven't had projects of it, when they could specifically meet that set aside. Mm-hmm. We haven't had any of those. But if you talk to contractors in general, it's tough to do business with Kirkwood. Not because of it's just those types of projects, especially most of them will be water and streets. You need to be of a certain size to be able to take on those. But anyone's, has the capacity to bid.
Can someone give me the Cliff Notes version of the Meacham Park redevelopment project? I know we're going to be hearing more about that, which is part of the issue that surfaced.
Well, I guess I'm unfortunately most qualified to speak of that because, one, I was the high-profile African-American in the community prior to annexation. So I was asked to participate in working with the neighborhood for it to be, for Kirkwood and Meacham Park to join. So I worked through that process. And in that process, what we found and that we did was because it was unincorporated, we worked with the county. That started out by having survey meetings with the residents about what they pictured their neighborhood being. We adopted that document and tried to come up with a plan. Now, because of the intricacies of that plan, we had to find a way to finance it, and the best way to finance it after we had done the research was a TIF. So we did a TIF. In that TIF, real quickly, the thing that we did to make sure that we tried to protect the residents as much as possible. No commercial development could be done before the residential component was done. So they couldn't build the big box stores that are sitting there now before they did all of the residential. I think when you measure the Meacham Park, Kirkwood TIFF against other TIFFs, we did a very good job. Could we do better today in hindsight? Yes. But that TIFF, when we spent over $5 million on the residential component, you know, by itself, I think is something we should be proud of.
We have another clip from Sarah's film dealing with the way the attitude of people today, looking back on that. Let's get a sense of what at least some of these people are thinking.
The plan initially would have engulfed three-fourths of Meacham Park. We fought hard to push back. The redevelopment came and said that they needed 12 acres to make a strip mall. In the final analysis, they took 52 acres. That was a double cross. My mother's home was there. Were many homes, African American had homes there, and the redevelopment plan came with a stipulation that they would give you a house for a house, but that you couldn't move a house for a house in the greater Kirkwood. You had to stay in the confines of Meacham Park. And people thought that was an inequity.
And Sarah, people thought they were double-crossed.
Yeah. That was from my interview. I don't know what it is. Yeah.
Thoughts about that, Ron Hodges?
Well, you know, once again, I was on that mediation agreement, and earlier I stated sometimes the challenge is from the critics about what you say. I try to be careful what I say, but I try to be correct about it. One of the things for me at this point, during the mediation agreement, I was as passionate about the TIFF program, how we had shoddy contractors. I'm as passionate about the buyout because I had family that had property there too. All those issues. I was very passionate about it. I don't want to get into the details now about the mediation agreement and what the results were, but let me say this. At this point in present, working on the TIFF is over. The buyout is over. The city's not getting ready to give us any more or any of those homeowners any more money now for those that buyout, whether good or bad or how it happened. And I'm as passionate about it today as I was then when I was put on that mediation team. But that is not today going to move us forward. Steady talking about the TIFF and stuff. Yes, it's just like slavery. You need to know what happened, but at the same time, you got to move on. And so these are the things that I want, or I would like to say I would like to see happen from the citizens of Kirkwood are trying to move on. HR, Human Rights Commission, CFUH, MNIA. You know, I would hope that we all are working for the same cause, trying to make things better. I mean, yeah, we can talk about the past, but the past is not going to help us move forward.
I would argue, though, that as a white woman, not knowing the details of that was very helpful for me understanding the history of Meacham Park. Mm. And I felt that there was overall, when I was doing this film, a real lack about the history of Meacham Park. And that created a lot of sadness for me that here we had this amazing African-American community that was, you know, had history, and that there was little documentation of like what it had been and what it was. And so, I mean, I think for me, that clip in there is not as much meant to stir up as more just to inform about the history of the community.
It's a good way to, I think it's excellent because you have to have that other perspective of something. Going into this, as I said, I'm a third generation resident. I have family in Meacham Park as well. But when you are disenfranchised, when you've never seen government work for you, it's totally understandable. And it's hard to overcome. Now, I can tell you, and I'll be candid here, when you'd hear from residents in Meacham Park about black representation, but some of those residents resented my brother and I being on the TIFF commission and told the council that the two ward boys are too powerful. You need to take one of them off of it. Well, I'm not there for me. That wasn't about me. I was given a job and a duty to go out and try and work the best that I could for the residents of Meacham Park and Kirkwood. You know, one of the things that may not have happened in the interview was that we even sat down with residents and said, do you still want to call it Meacham Park? When you talk about preserving the history, the city of Kirkwood preserved Turner School. The city spent the money and the time to get that on the National Historic Preservation List. So, you know, there's always going to be good and bad and things you could do better. What we need to do, and Ron is correct, is you never forget the past, because my father always taught me you don't know where you're going if you don't know where you came from. So I think that that's important. But, you know, as a community, I think we, when it comes to, you heard on there about the house for house, jealously, one of the things that I wanted to do was preserve as much of Black presence in Kirkwood, not just Meacham Park, but mm-hmm. Kirkwood. But because of a TIF, you can only spend the money in the TIF area. You know, so we had to stay, you know, structure it the way we did, under the terms that we could and under the law. So that was one of the bad things.
I have to take another break now. You've just been listening to Paul Ward, who is the deputy mayor of the city of Kirkwood. He's also a member of the city council there. He's with me in studio, as is Ron Hodges, chair of the Community for Understanding and Hope. Reverend Scott Stearman is with us, senior pastor, at the Kirkwood Baptist Church. And also with us is Sarah Paulson, who is the producer of Elegy to Connie, a film dealing with the situation in Kirkwood today, 6 years after the shooting at the Kirkwood City Council meeting that left six dead. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment and bring you listeners into it when we come back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our discussion about what's going on in the city of Kirkwood today, 6.5 years after the shooting at that city council meeting, which left six people dead back in 2008. The genesis of this discussion is a film that is produced by Sarah Paulson, who is with me in studio. The film is called Elegy to Connie and deals with the situation leading up to that shooting and what has developed in the city of Kirkwood since. Scott Stearman, let me turn to you. We had an email from one of our listeners who said that this issue in Kirkwood is not so much an issue about race as it is an issue about class. That makes sense to you?
Yeah, it certainly does. Sarah used the word components, and when you talk about this issue, you can't really separate race. I wouldn't use the word class. I would use the word economics. There's an economic reality that undergirds this racial division that we all are really aware of, and that, of course, the play in the whole TIF discussion and the whole background in Meacham Park. So those strands are almost impossible to sort of separate. And Ron is right. I don't think there are going to be any economic reparations for what's happened in the past. So the question that we all must face, but I would say particularly those of us of white privilege, is, the onus is on us to figure out what moving forward means and with these economic realities. How do we help people, grow economically the way we all want to?
I don't want to oversimplify this thing because it's anything but a simple situation. But to really get some sense of where we are, where you are now in Kirkwood, and this may be a bad way to do it, but on a scale of 1 to 10, where are we in terms of this coming together and breaching the divide? I mean, are we still around 1 or 2, or are we up around 8 or 9?
I'm going to say we're around 6. Just my opinion, as I said earlier, there's been some progression made. As I said earlier, do we need more? Do we have to do more? Sure. But I think some of the things we have accomplished would not have been accomplished for the fact that several people or several organizations, the city, the ministers in Kirkwood, the citizens coming together, steady trying to make these efforts happen.
Mm-hmm. Don, I'd like to give you an example of where I think we're a 6 or 7. So Kirkwood Baptist has, since the tragedy, has been working closely with Harrison Avenue Missionary Baptist Church. It's a Black church there in town, and Reverend Jeff Croft and I have been working together almost hand-in-hand in a number of different projects through the years. Hands on Kirkwood, this day-long missional service day. Last year we had about 500 volunteers out all over the city doing things. This year we'll do the same thing, and we hope to have even more. And those kind of coming together, building relationships, doing studies together, serving the neighborhood together, these things are they're not a fix, but they are part of the fix. They are a component, if you will, of a community that is growing, developing in good ways.
We're an instant gratification society, right. And everybody would like the situation to be at a 10 right now, but right. everyone has to realize, too, right. it doesn't work that way.
That's right. Right.
Paul, are you good with a 6 or a 7?
I'm more on a 7, and I will say, Scott Stearman is my pastor, so I've been involved with Hands on Kirkwood. I was because of Scott, I was a founding member of CFUH. I was on the HRC prior to the tragedy, and I had to step down from HRC to go back on the city council.
It's a real alphabet soup resulting from all this.
So it, but yes, I'm a hope. I'm a glass half. Actually, I believe the glass is more than half full. It's half water and half air, so it's full. we've got to keep moving forward and looking forward, and that's the best thing that this community can do, and I think that's what we're all about.
Let's go back to the phones. Ron?
I just wanted to say one other thing. One other area that I'm still concerned with in Kirkwood is, we always talk about the black and the whites, but we have a lot more ethnic groups in Kirkwood that we're also wanting to address all nationalities in Kirkwood, which is important.
Well, this whole dialogue, I'm making an assumption here, is making you more aware, perhaps, than you might have been a few years ago.
Exactly.
That there are other groups there that issues need to be addressed. Let's go back to the phones, bring in Ira calling from North St. Louis. Ira, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Good morning, you guys. I think one of the problems that you guys are looking here, the thing about privilege, the thing about class, those things are kind of generational. The gentleman just spoke, he had his family go back 2 generations. So there are more generations after him, okay? So how they need to be discussing, how can they go back, okay, and create a foundation? A lot of those people are still alive, they need help out there. And I guess my second point would be, there's a group, the lady's name is Harriet, you guys know what I'm talking about.
Harriet Patton.
Right, there you go. Why isn't she a part of this conversation?
Harriet's, from my understanding, is very private and doesn't really like to be on air live. She'd rather have one-on-one conversations.
She is part of your film, though. So
yeah,
is that
yeah.
correct? Yeah.
I noticed her voice, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I would just say, from my standpoint, Harriet and I have an ongoing conversation every few weeks or months. In fact, I missed a call from her today, and she's still engaged in this conversation. So she's not table today, but she's very much involved in the Kirkwood discussions.
She has been invited to the program. Just a moment. She's been invited to the program on a number of occasions and has declined. And I think the shyness that you spoke of may have played a role in that. Yeah, go ahead, Ira.
Well, I guess my other question would be, knowing what we know, you can put things for the future on paper, but you cannot change, educate the people, but has it already been dealt wrong? You mean the thing about, courtesy, privilege, okay, that's a class situation there altogether.
Ron Hodges, go ahead.
I'd like to comment on that. One of the bad perceptions for me among my community is it's not all Kirkwood's duty to make everything right. It takes some of us to work within our community and along with city government to make things right. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying the city is not supposed to, where they can, help resources or whatever. But let's face it, home comes first. And some of the things we need to help ourselves do, too, to move forward.
I think that what Paul Ward spoke about, that there were no people of color in positions within the city, I think that's an important way to move forward. I think having a representative on council that is eventually from Meacham Park is a way to move forward. I know, when you've talked about what number is Kirkwood right now. I mean, I know when I'm speaking with my mother and her friends, I think an asset is that like 2 of the women I interviewed are now on council. So we have more women leaders. I would also say that though they also speak that there is sort of a old boys network that is still very active in Kirkwood.
Well, if I make a little bit of correction.
Yeah.
At one time we had two female council members and a mayor. And actually, the largest vote tallied in the history of Kirkwood was by a female mayor, Marge Schramm. and Marge Schramm and Barb Byerly, who Barb was a councilman, Marge, were the reason I'm a city councilman, because they encouraged me, because I could never picture myself doing this kind of stuff. It wasn't what I wanted to do, but they said, no, Paul, you have something to add. So I think this community does embrace, and Marge was a very effective mayor, probably a little bit more genteel than Connie, but she got, I mean, all of the TIF and all of those things happened under Marge's reign. And so, yes, but, you know, and some people just forget, you know, that the majority of people in this country are female. You know?
Well, but I think that part of white privilege is that it is a white male Christian perspective that is the dominant. And so that's why I think that it's important that there are females, that there are people of color in leadership. So I guess I should clarify that. And I think going back to like the discussion of class, I mean, some of class relates to our history of racism in the society, you know, where education, where we had Jim Crow laws, where, I mean, I feel like that there, I think what you were saying, Scott, about it not being separable, I think that's true.
Yeah. So. At risk of being Pollyanna, though, I want to give another example here, Don, if I could quickly. That in November of 2012, the city council passed an ordinance, an anti-discrimination ordinance for LGBT people. So that speaks of a community, though, very historically very conservative, white Christian, who is willing to branch out and say, we don't discriminate.
Well, that's changing all over the country.
Yes,
there's been certainly a groundswell in that area.
I'm sorry. Can I just add, if possible, one thing
very quickly
that I am really, really proud about when we say what has happened or changed in Kirkwood since all this? I want to remind some people of some things. Those covenants, Greenbrier had a covenant where African Americans on this covenant were not allowed to do anything but be of service there.
Mm-hmm.
Her last name is Larkin. Anybody remember her first name? That wrote the article? Linda Larkin,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wrote the article about that. Well, Kirkwood and City of Kirkwood and the Human Rights Commission took care of that. We've got that removed off the books. So there's a big change in what the people in Kirkwood are wanting to do.
Is there any sense, and our time is getting away, about a minute and a half left, we have a caller who wants to ask this question. I'll ask it instead. Is there any sense that something like this, something like what happened 6 years ago, could happen again? Paul, very quickly.
Yes.
That it could
evil,
happen
again. Evil is always ready to strike. And let me, real quickly, a thing about Cookie is I wish someone would, my brother and I were talking about this, I wish someone would look at and interview people about his behavior to see if there was some mental aspects that someone could address about this, because that gets lost in all of this.
There's also a gun issue, which you raise in your film that we don't have time to get into now. That would generate a caller crisis.
Yes, it would.
Very quickly, Ron, could it happen?
No, that, like I said, that is one important thing that that I think that we need to recognize, too, that the city felt that we're not going to tolerate those type of covenants. And, you know, we know those covenants are all across the country. But Kirkwood, we did something about it. Even though the residents in Greenbrier weren't treating people that way, but it was still on their books.
It's a work in progress,
exactly.
Obviously. Sarah, very quickly, you have any feeling for that?
I think shootings are going to continue to happen. And I don't think it's specifically just Kirkwood. I mean, I think that it is a complicated answer that we really need to ask ourselves about our connection with other humans, about guns, about mental illness, about
Scott. Yeah, I think it could happen again, but I think we are creating a climate where it is less likely, and that's what matters.
That's a good note to leave it on, and I hope you're absolutely right on that. Folks, thanks so much for being with us. We have been talking with Sarah Paulson and Ron Hodges, Paul Ward, and Reverend Scott Stearman about the situation in Kirkwood today. A reminder that Sarah's film, Elegy to Connie, will be shown at the Tivoli on July 13th at 2:30 in the afternoon. Thank you all so much for being with us. Appreciate your time and the conversation.
Thank you.
Tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, we'll take a look at flooding on the Mississippi River as the river crests in our region. We'll also get updates on how the race for St. Louis County Executive is shaping up.
Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.